MMA Roadshow, episode number 443. My name is John Morgan, and Cole Coffee is with me in this, how do I describe Las Vegas right now? We're getting to
paradise.
My favorite time of the year, man. What do I say all the time? If you've ever heard me, and I'm singing the virtues of when you need to be in Las Vegas, I always say April or October. But I think out of April and October, I've determined that October is actually my favorite because it reaches that period of time where that 110-degree weather, is like, I don't hate it much. But after a while, you're like, can it please just cool off a little bit? You know, when it's April, it's like the cold winds are dying down a little bit. It's starting to warm up. And you feel summer coming in. But right now, it's like summer easing away. It's like 75 degrees outside right now. And we're just walking into my favorite time of the year. So I got windows open. I got doors open. You know what I mean? We're getting some fresh air.
I hear birds chirping. You sound like it's like the lead into a Disney movie. The sun's shining. The animals all come out of their little holes in the ground where they've been trying to stay cool. It is wonderful. I think I'm with you. I think October has to be one of the best. But, I mean, maybe it's recency bias. But I know right now looking outside, it's beautiful. It's sunny. It feels good outside. Even the other day when we had the UFC decided to put outdoor ceremonial events and all that other stuff, it was hot, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been. This time of year is just beautiful. It's amazing. It's so nice. This is definitely a good time to visit, and I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving the weather right now.
I should say, by the way, I thought about you a lot as people were talking about, of course, the UFC Noche. Of course, all the controversy and everything. We'll get to all that and the discussions of the continued fallout of Noche UFC. But I know, I can't remember. Some media member brought up, hey, what do you think about Noche UFC? Oh, yeah. And Dana White's like, yeah, it was great. You know, and then you're like, somebody was like, wow, how about those outdoor weigh-ins? That was cool, right? And yeah, you know, we do that sometimes from time to time. It's nice out there. And I was thinking of you just being like, I heard it wasn't so nice. You know, it's 100 degrees outside. It may look cool on tape and everything. I think John Anik was tweeting like, we got to do this more often. This is amazing.
He was under shade. was under shade. And I'm sure they probably had an AC machine up there as well. It's funny because I'm the one that asked Dana about what he thought about the outdoor thing. And when he was like, oh, yeah, we'll do it again. It's funny because Kaplan was giving me grief. I asked him about the outdoor thing, but then he was like, we've done that before, but somebody said something about Noche UFC, and he like went to, it was something else, and he was like, blah, 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 and he was giving me credit, like that was my idea, like of like bringing up something about the event, and I was just like, I just nodded. I was like, I'm not quite sure what he's talking about. I'm just going to nod. Let him get it through his thought. I mean, that doesn't bring any point to just like interrupt him to be like, well, no, you know, I don't think that was me that thought of the Noche thing, but blah, blah, blah. But I remember Kaplan at the end was like, look at you taking credit for Noche UFC. That wasn't your idea. I was like, hey, I'm just letting the man talk.
He did. Check the record. He did basically give you credit. He was like, you know, I think I was talking to you, and you said, why don't you guys do this? And so I went back to my office, and we got that done the next day. You know what I mean?
Like, you're welcome, fans. Mexico, you owe me a square. I did that for you.
Cole Coffee's like, you know how long I actually worked at the UFC and didn't get anything done? And
I know. He didn't even remember my name. I was still guy and like hey and fella, you know, by the time I left. But it's funny, but it was interesting because he's like, you know, we've done that before. I was like, well, we've done it in some places, but we've never done it in Vegas that I can recall that we've done one of those recently. I mean, if he's talking about like in, you know, Australia and we've done other stuff, those have always just been open workouts. I don't remember ever doing a ceremonial weigh-in in another country outside.
I remember.
I mean, maybe Brazil. Brazil, I do remember doing an outdoor arena in Brazil one year where they did the weigh-ins in an arena that was outside. But outside of Brazil, I can't think of a place where we did weigh-ins outside.
I remember one because I remember it was Vancouver. And I'll always remember it, number one, because we were outside. And Vancouver, to me, is one of the most beautiful cities on earth. But I'll never forget, like, right before the open weigh-in started, like, a seaplane, like, landed in the water right behind the stage or whatever. I was like, dude, you couldn't draw up the B-roll any better than that.
That's awesome.
And that was one where Kenny Florian fought Diego Nunes. And Kenny Florian wore a Boston Bruins jersey, And Diego Nunes wore like a Vancouver Canucks jersey. So it's kind of cool. They had like the rival hockey.
So that'd be 131.
There. 131.
So that was right before
my time. That's one of the few that I ever remember. And I just remember because, but again, you're talking about
June 10, 2011.
Yeah, you're talking about the Pacific Northwest at that point. I mean, the weather's a little bit different than Vegas. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, it was, hey, listen.
It was a decent turnout. I was a little worried at first. I didn't think it was going to, you know, when we were looking at the crowd lined up at first, I was like, whoa, they went through a lot of trouble to, you know, put this together. There's not a lot of people. It looked at one point, there was more security than there was fans.
Oh, wow.
But by the end of it, dude, it had a pretty good turnout. Everybody was wearing those awesome green, like Noche UFC jersey shirt things. And it was definitely a good turnout, but man, I didn't see anybody pass out. That was awesome. Good for everybody. And it's not even just like, drunks got there or whatever, which can happen, but everybody looked hydrated. They looked in like good sorts, you know, like everybody was smart. It wasn't like everybody was like, hey, we've been getting wasted all day long and now we're going to go to this big, you know, to do. It was good. It was pleasantly surprising that it wasn't as bad as I thought it could have been. So,
I mean, look,
I can see where they're probably happy with it.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, remember, the whole reason they do things like that is just to create foot traffic, right? To get attention as people walk by. You know what I mean? We used to do open workouts every now and then outside, like you said. And it was just so, hey, even if people don't have a ticket, they can at least join in the festivities. And
you
maybe
see something. Yep.
Yeah, and maybe if they didn't know that the event was in town or they weren't thinking about buying a ticket, they'd end up doing it. And I'll tell you what, man, I do want to say, man, overall, I thought that Noche USC concept was awesome. I'm glad to hear that Dana White loves it. I'm glad to hear that they want to continue doing it because I thought it came together well. The venue that night, man, I tweeted a couple different times, but it felt so special, man, because we had heard early on, they're like, hey, man, this arena might not be packed. You know, it's a fight night. It's not a pay-per-view. T-Mobile's a big building. It might not be packed. But I'll tell you what, by the time fight night rolled around, the arena was packed, and the atmosphere in there was cool, man. I mean, from Tracy Cortez on, like, any time a Mexican fighter walked in or was representing the Mexican flag, like, they were on point. It was loud. It was cool, man. It was super cool. And I think even Dana was a little bit unsure about, hey, how is this concept going to come off? Is it going to seem cheesy, or is it going to seem like we're, you know? But no, man, I thought it came out great, and I'm glad to hear that they're going to do it every year. I thought
it was
fun.
He was stoked, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You're like hearing him talk the other day, he's like, we're going to now make sure we can always get that date, whether it's here or somewhere. He's like, if somebody else is using that date, we'll go to a different arena.
Yeah.
You know, or something. I was like, good for you. And like, he's bought all into it, you know. And I'm glad that it felt like that. I know, I can tell you from being in the media tent, it felt like every other event ever at T-Mobile, you know. But one thing I did notice, and I wondered, at least I don't remember ever hearing, you know, like on the weigh-ins, you heard some boos when the opponent of the Mexican fighter would come up there. But I don't remember feeling that on fight night. It felt like everybody was just excited for a fighter to come out. Like, they definitely were pops for the Mexican fighters, but I don't remember them ever like going crazy, boo, hating on the opponent as well. It just seemed like they were excited. Maybe there was some, but didn't come through in the back of the arena.
I would agree.
Watching
with that.
It from a TV screen.
I kind of remember. I feel like maybe Kyle Nelson got some as a Canadian coming in. Just a little bit, though. Not a lot.
Oh, well, Canada deserves it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, exactly.
I get
dirty
that.
Canadians. You got to boo them. No, just kidding, obviously.
Slightly. They're just moderately dirty.
I think Valentina got some hate. I think Valentina got a little bit of booze. But I mean, that's
interesting.
But that's a main event. It's a title fight.
Yeah, that's
right?
Cool. And they definitely won the main event. But that's weird. I didn't remember seeing them on the team, but that kind of gives a little more excitement. Knowing that it was, but yeah, I didn't remember, but also maybe I was knee deep in doing an edit, so I didn't really partake. I know there was a lot of anticipation. The meeting room cleared out. Everybody, if they're in the back tent and they have rooms to get out there, everybody left to run out there. And I think at one point there were three of us in the back because they were like, we're going to try to bring, who did they rush out there? Maybe it was Daniel Zellhuber. They were like, can we try to rush him through? And we're like, yeah, of course. And by the time they brought him out, there were three of us in the back room. And of course, only two of us asked questions because the third one was Scott, and Scott never asked anything. Love you, Scott. Thanks for helping out. It was just me and Kaplan in the front. And then even the UFC came there like, you know, dude, thank you for making that quick. Because I remember at one point I was finishing. I was still asking questions when Valentina and them came out because they were starting to do the intros. And Kaplan told me that she was starting to get pissed that I was still talking. while they're getting ready to do the thing. And I was like, we're doing an interview. If we're going to do the interview, we're going
to
do the interview.
I
told him, I was like, in the periphery, I was seeing where the fight was, and I was going to be done by the time that they walk forward to like touch gloves and fight or whatever. But I was like, also, he was just excited. You know, Nick Six and those cats were in there. I was like, of course, I'm going to give the guy that trains at a Vegas gym some love. And it was a great fight, you know, and he's such a good kid. But yeah, it was interesting, you know, they were rushing him through. And I was like, oh, there's only like two of us back here for him. So that's why I missed Valentina going out there, because we were in the middle of that interview. So maybe that's why I didn't hear the booze or anything. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, so tied to Noche USC, let me just say I'll apologize for being one day later than normal. I promise we'll be back to normal next week. I know we've had a little bit of a rocky schedule the past couple weeks, but yesterday was a bit of a crazy day. Obviously, you and I got together to do the UFC Fight Night 228 Media Day at the UFC Apex, and then I was invited to be part of the Nevada State Athletic Commission training seminar that was shortly afterwards. And then on top of that, I had soccer practice with my kid. And then my wife was actually nice enough to hook us up with tickets to go see the Las Vegas Aviators from the pool out there at the Las Vegas ballpark.
Yes, I saw those pictures. It's funny, guy. I was like, I thought John had some work to do. And this motherfucker's out here. He's at the pool.
Eli
looked like he was enjoying himself. That was cool. That pool was neat.
Yeah, I'd never been there. I'd been out to the ballpark before. Obviously, you and I had gone out to the ballpark before, but I'd never been in that little pool area before. And it was pretty cool. And yeah, Eli had a blast. I don't think he watched a whole lot.
And it's right by the bar. Now I see why you're in it. It's literally, is the bar inside the pool area, or you have to walk out of the pool?
Oh, no, sir. The bar is inside the pool. And the added benefit of being in the pool area is that, I mean, it may be an added benefit. I don't know if it is or not, but they will let you run a tab there. So instead of having to walk up and just do like a new transaction every time, because you are, you know, a captive audience inside that fenced area, she's like, you can run a tab. I was like, I can run a tab? She's like, absolutely. So had a couple
of
frosty beverages.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, Eli did not watch much baseball, but he got a whole lot of swimming in, and there were some other kids in there that he was they were playing around, having a good time with. So it was
fun.
That's
awesome.
But, yes, that was after my work, sir. The reason we couldn't do it all tied in together. But part of it was the Nevada State Athletic Commission training call, which I got to be a part of yesterday. Now, I will point out, because a lot of people keyed in on the fact that the commission did hold this call. I will remind everybody, of course, anybody that listens to this show knows, they also held one the previous week. So this is not like this is never done or it's unprecedented. I mean, this is something they do routinely. Now, did they do it?
It was a 10-8 training last week, training.
It actually was 10-8 training. Now, it's always training. It's always judging training. But it is funny. The week before, it was about 10-8s as well. So I just wanted to point out, it's not unprecedented. This type of training happens all the time. But it was absolutely very much related to the 10-8s and the controversy.
Do you guys know who attended? Do they have like attendee list? The judges and stuff that did it?
Yeah, I mean, you could see everybody on the screen. I didn't keep a firm list of everybody was there. I would know in terms of media, it was myself, Mark Raimondi, Stephen Baracco, and Aaron Bronstetter were the four media members that were on there. And then I believe there were about 15 judges. Now, Mike Bell was not on the training call, and a lot of people have kind of keyed in on that to be like, the guy we're talking about wasn't even there. The guy had other things going on his schedule. I would imagine probably his full-time job, if I'm being honest with you. But rest assured, he has. They have spoken with Mr. Mike Bell. You know, I hate to keep bringing his name up because he is such a respected judge in the community and does such a good job. But there's no question about it. I mean, that the scoring was controversial. And in fact, the whole point of this particular training call was to go back and rewatch every round that had a 10-8 on it, because the 10-8s that were on the night. The interesting thing that Jeff Mullen pointed out was, you know, we had 10-8s, but even in our rounds that had 10-8s, none of it, we were never, as judges,
unanimously 10-8.
Unanimous, exactly. There were no unanimous 10-8s. It was 10-8 to 9. So it was like, look, we got to make sure we're on the same page about this. And so that's what was done, was reviewed every round that had a 10-8 on it. And so that was all three rounds of Nuts and Man, round one of Godinez and Reed. And then, of course, the infamous 10-8 from Shevchenko and Grasso there. So it's good. I mean, the training is good, man. I really appreciate the opportunity to be a part of it. I'm sure by now everybody's heard the 3 Ds, and that's the focus of it. It's damage, dominance, and duration, with damage really being the key out of those three. You know, the impact and the damage that's being done. The other thing that was really pointed out, and I thought it was a key reminder, was that also remembering to factor in if there's no offense from the opponent. You know, if it's totally a one-sided round, maybe the damage isn't as bad as you thought it would be to be a 10-8, but because the other fighter does literally nothing in reply, that you really need to consider doing a 10-8 there. So ultimately the commission, and it was, I thought it was good too, because a lot of times in some of the past training sessions that I've been a part of, it's been kind of more of like theory almost. Like, let's review these rounds. Like the one we did a week ago, there were four really, really close rounds. Like really, I mean, man, and these weren't so much about, it was about 10-8, but it was about who got the right one and that sort of thing. And but it was more just like, well, if you're looking at it, here's what you're looking at, and here's what you're thinking. This was more like, this is a 10-9, this is a 10-8, and if you said 10-9, you got it wrong. You know what I mean? Yeah. And trying to be real.
Because it sounds like if somebody says a close fight, 10-8, that shouldn't even be in like the discussion. Because if it's a close, you're looking at like, you know, at 10-9, maybe a, can there be a 10-10? Can there be a 9-9 if you're just like, neither one did it? I mean, like, it's just interesting. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad that they're doing it. It sucks that, you know, of course, yeah, you don't want to kick the guy while he's down. I don't know the guy personally. I know a lot of people have been vouching for him, and everybody makes mistakes. We've seen great guys that we appreciate and respect make mistakes. Mark Goddard, who I think is a great one, we've seen him fuck up. Mark Smith, he's a good one. He fucks up. Yep. They all mess up. Everybody has moments or whatever. But you would like to hear that they're actually, you see guys actually do some of these trainings and stuff. You know, like there's, you know, the fact that you're able, I'm glad that you guys were able to see some people on there, you know. I mean, there's a lot of people that are like, you know, okay, well, we're never going to actually see these guys accountable. You know, the commission's going to say, well, we talk to them. You know, like, okay, so we just continue taking your word that you talk with them and that change is going to happen. And, you know, a lot of times they say, well, you know, I know this person had a bad day, but they get a lot of reps. They get a lot of whatever, you know, they're going to happen, you know, but they'll, you know, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. It's good to hear that they're actually putting this out there. You know, you'd like to hope that at some point, then they make these things mandatory where, you know, at a certain time length, they need to actively, you know, regardless if you've done 15 events in the last 6 months, you know, you should have a mandatory training where they have to sign off and say as part of their recertification part, like you've attended this training where they can do it instead of just saying, Jeff, I'm busy. I can't get there. You know, trust me, I'm good. I get it. I went back and watched it. Trust me, I'm fine. You know, like I'd rather the commission be a little bit more accountable to the people that are under them, that they've actually done these sort of trainings. I mean, I think right now commission can say, well, you know, we put out these trainings. We do what we can, you know, we're making it available. That's all we can do. Well, I think you can do more than that. You know, I think you can hold these guys a little bit more accountable and make that. And I think a lot of people would be a little bit more lenient if they understand that if it's on the level and they can see it. Like if they say, okay, we're making mandatory training that within every 6 months, the guy has to attend a training on this 10-8, that this. Or even just if it's a yearly.
Sure.
We have to do the crazy yearly shit for our corporate stuff. You know,
every corporation.
And their certificates. Like, just keep a record. And then if somebody says, this guy's made some iffy calls, you know, when was the last time you're training? They're like, well, we offer up training every year for stuff. And it's like, okay, well, did the guy go? Can you show me that he actually went to the stuff?
Yeah.
And then I think somebody would be like, okay, commission, I'm not going to yell at you because you're trying to do what you did. The guy attended this or whatever, you know. And then you kind of wash your hands of it, or, you know, or you just, well, you at least stop hounding the commission.
Yeah.
And I think right now when I hear from other media stuff is they feel like the commission is just not doing enough job of making sure that people are doing these sort of things, attending these trainings and others or the sort of stuff.
And I think that's a big message that I definitely want to make sure that people get out there, is that the judges and the referees, they do care. You know what I mean? I think a lot of people tend to think like, oh, they just show up and whatever happens and they don't really care. No, they beat themselves up over it. I mean, they really do. Like they talk about it all the time. They you know, when they do make mistakes, when they do something that they think could have been wrong, I mean, they do care about it way more than you would ever imagine. Like way more than you would ever imagine. And I think that's that's an important part. But that still doesn't alleviate the need for exactly what you're saying, like constant training, constant evaluation, constant certification. Even on the calls, it's kind of cool. It's like on a Skype call or whatever, but they'll pop up like a survey or whatever, which is like, what would your score for that round be? And you got like 10-9 red, 10-8 red, 10-9 blue, 10-8 blue, but it'll have like the name as well. But there's no reason you couldn't do that in a training session. Just like you said, like when I used to work for Gannett, like all the dumb things that you have to do were like, you can't skip through them because you got to watch them and you got to make sure you click yep. the right thing. I mean, I think that could definitely be a thing where you have to do that. And the other thing that I've always stood for that I wish could be evaluated and developed is just a constant evaluation thing. I know that'd be a little bit difficult, but if we're getting to the point now where we're saying, as a commission, I feel confident that a 10-9 is right, a 10-8 is right, you know, one is wrong, whatever the case may be. I would love to see just an evaluation that shows like, hey, man, you know, this judge right here judged, you know, 300 rounds over the course of this year, and in 290 of them, he was spot on, or whatever the case may be. You know right. what I mean? Like, so that way, when we go like, hey, why are those the three judges that were selected for this title fight? Well, it's very right. easy. If you look at our last year's worth of data, these are the three at the very top of the list who are they had the highest accurate. Yeah, they had the highest percentage of accuracy. And I don't know the easiest way to track that, to mandate that, to you know, again, somebody's got to be the one, and I know it's not easy to somebody's got to be willing to say this is right, this is wrong, you know what I mean, versus just, well, that's what most people said. Somebody has to say what's right and what's wrong. But if they're willing to do that, I think that would be spot on, and then we could just have a list, and maybe you don't have to have all the data. And I do totally understand, like, and I've been one too that's pressed over the years to say, I wish we had more transparency, I wish we could hear from these officials, right? But I totally understand why you're not going to see the officials themselves go up there, right? Like, I've said this for years, so if you apologize if you heard me say this before, but I think it's worth reminding, like, no Fortune 500 company out there is going to just be like, oh, yeah, feel free to grab one of my guys from the workroom right there and put him in front of the media and let him answer questions about our company. Like, no. It's either going to be the heads of the company or it's going to be, you know, approved spokespeople for the company. So, you know, I totally get if it's only Jeff Mullen or another commission head, or I totally get if it's only an approved spokesperson. Like, I don't ever anticipate a day where every referee and judge could potentially be in front of the media, because I don't think any company operates like that, where you could just take some rank and file employee or whatever and put them up in front of the media. That's not going to happen. But if you had a list, again, of here's the evaluations, here's why this person was on it, here's where their accuracy is, etc., and then maybe you did have an opportunity for at least a representative to speak, I think those would both be really big steps in the right direction to know that we're trying to do the best we can.
Well, I mean, I can definitely see where your point where, you know, especially if you're talking about like figureheads or somebody of a company, those are the decision makers, and they're usually they should be able to speak on the decision that they make. I think if they did have to put somebody in front, they'd give them enough training to say, well, my purview is on these decisions that I made personally. And I can see where you could put somebody that maybe is not an exec of the commission, because his purview would just be the decisions he made on that particular fight.
But if they started asking about the other scope. You couldn't, like, when I worked for Gannett, like, I couldn't do an interview based on the operations of MMA Junkie, right? I don't think you couldn't go speak to the media and talk about that, right?
True. But I mean, I don't think they would, you know, I think if it got to the point where they're asking him about, you know, how the commission runs and operates, they could say, well, that's outside of my purview. I'm here to speak on Valentina Shevchenko versus Alexa Grasso, my knowledge of what I saw in rounds one, two, or three.
Only what
anything
I saw.
Outside of, only what I saw.
Not what
everything
anybody else saw.
Is outside of my purview, and I'm not willing to and able to comment on that particular stuff, but I can answer questions to what I saw that evening and that sort of deal. Then I can see where somebody do it. And I think, you know, because I know with even like stuff with like Red Cross, sometimes when I go cover some stuff, they're like, and if you want me, you could talk to media. I was like, I don't want to fucking talk to media. I was like, half the shit I don't understand. But they give you a specific of what you can talk about and little other things. And if it's something else, then you push it off to somebody else and say, I can't answer that particular area. I don't have that. I don't have enough information at hand, but I can give you the name of the person that can talk about that. And I think that's the same sort of thing that they could do with some of these judges speak that night and just say, you were able to talk about what you saw that evening, what why you decided, but anything outside of that, well, whether it become to decisions on punishment, fighters, this, anything outside of what you saw that evening, should not be what's available. And you can just say, I have no comment on that. That's outside of my purview of this situation. And I think we could get at least some sort of thing. But you're right. I think it's a slippery slope, because I think as once anybody's up there, just like when we see Dane up there or whatever, it's not like they just stick to the fight that happened.
Right.
Eventually, somebody's going to go off book and try to get some other information. Dana has the availability, and he has the confidence, and he has the wherewithal to say, okay, fuck it. Yeah, I'll go down that route with you for a little bit. Whereas somebody else should be able to just say, sorry, you know, like, no comment, or I'm not able to make a comment on that situation, you know, blah, 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 blah. And again, maybe it's not the right idea for anything, but I think probably too, it's just a matter of, you know, people get frustrated and they want to have an outlet to direct some questions. Whether if you get no real answer, I think people are placated and a little bit by just getting some sort of feedback, or at least the chance to vent. And maybe that, if they don't get that, maybe more people should be calling into some of these commission things. And at the beginning, they won't answer you, but if you have a comment and you feel that this is and that is wrong, call into a commission. Make your comment at the beginning when they open it up, whether anybody has any comments or whatever, say your piece. They're not going to answer, and they're not obligated to answer anything back to you or give you a response, but you can at least say something, and maybe that'll get it off your chest and you'll feel better. Because I think sometimes that's just what people want. They're very frustrated. I don't understand these things. You know, there is a place that you guys can vent these to not just reporters. Like, why don't you ask the commission this? Well, I'm like, hey, if you really are that upset, call into the commission. They make their number publicly available. You can say your comment when they open it up for public comments, say your piece, and then go on about your life. unless you're really that upset and you're just going to make this the thing you hang your head on. You're like, I'm riding this till I die, you know? But it would be nice though to have that discourse, and luckily some media like yourself are able to go to these commissions and actually talk to some of these and some of these trainings to get some answers. But it would certainly, I think there could be a means where commission could review their decisions on fights in a public manner with boundaries.
Yeah.
They just got to be confident enough to say, I will answer this, but nothing else. Please do not ask me anything outside of this. This is all I'm just going to hear. Or you can just come make a statement. Even if just had a guy come make a statement, you know, maybe that just takes one step. When I don't want to field any questions, but I want to make a statement of why I made a decision, you know, and then peace out, walk out of the room.
That'd be nice. You're right. Even that, hey, not open for questions, but just we understand that this, you know, this one may be controversial, or hey, these are moments we need to speak about or whatever. I think there's a way. Hopefully, it seems like the dialogue is happening. We're trying to move in that direction. So
yeah,
it was good. I will say it was cool on the call. They actually let us as media. They kind of went to us. And what do you think about these particular rounds? Not on every round, but they worked us into the discussion and into the
that's cool.
into the evaluation. I've also the other thing, and I think I'm gonna have to do this at some point, and I got to figure out, you know, the timing and how to make it happen, whatever. But I have talked to several judges who said as well, they're like, you know, who by the way are appreciative of the discussion and like seeing us take part in it and all that. I think they like seeing us take part because they're at least now we as media are getting to see how much they do care and how much they really do put into us. I think they like us being a part of it. But the other thing that I've been told by a couple of people is like, man, until you've actually been in that chair on fight night, it's just a different feel. Like when you're there, it's just the view that you have sometimes, the fact that
it's obstructed.
Yeah.
They don't see the screens that easy. I mean, a lot of times I know when you watch the show and you're off to the side, you're like, oh, I can only see. And you try to look up to a screen. They're sitting in a chair. They might not have a decent angle of another screen, you know? So luckily, I mean, that's why there's three of them in there, you know, to kind of look around and see what happens. But, that's true. That's true. That's a lot of pressure to be in that chair. I can only imagine.
A lot of pressure. And it was kind of funny. I was even thinking about that, you know, after this training call. Because, like, you know, when I'm commentating, I have a monitor right there in front of me. And I look at the monitor, and I can look up to this action. And I've got the monitor. So I can always have a pretty clear view. Now, obviously, at the highest level, the UFC, they have a monitor.
I was
going to
say, wait. Now that I think about it, I was like, they do have a small little monitor.
They do. At the highest level, they do. At the UFC, they do. But even like when I'm on press row, like sometimes you'll see me exactly what you said. Like I can't see something because I'm blocked by a post or whatever. And so I'll look back and I'll be looking at the big screens, or I'll lean back so I can look up at the big one. And I was thinking about that. If you were a judge and you were in a position where you didn't have a very good angle and maybe the monitor didn't have what you needed and you were trying to just look around for something else, I got to think if you were caught on camera, like, looking, like, around, like, you're, you know.
Not a good look.
Yeah, people would just thrash you, like, even though you're searching for the best view possible, the best angle possible. I'm sure people would be like, what is this?
Yeah.
What is this idiot looking at?
Even the little monitors they have in front of them, your line of view, when they're sitting, they're usually sitting in a high top chair. So they're sitting up above the walkway where somebody's going to walk. The monitor often is sitting on that little walkway or even to it. So when you look at they're either looking up and upwards at the action, or they have to look what could be equivalent of like 1 or 2 feet downward. Their eyes are looking. So if they wanted to look at the screen, they're not going to be seeing any action up top. They might be afraid to miss something. So they want to keep looking at the actual action, because in the act of looking down from the monitor, you might miss something,
True.
So that's tricky. It's tricky. It's almost like, you know, I can see where some of them might be like, if it'd be interesting to ask them, you know, how often do you find yourself going to the monitor, or do you feel that you're going to miss something? And do you always just try to watch the actual action in the cage in front of you? And you know, what's the percentage of time that you actually even look at the monitor? Is it for a replay in between? But most of them don't, because I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting. Yeah. Cause they have the monitors, but I wonder how often they actually find themselves finding the time to look at it, because it's not like it's right eye level where you can kind of do a periphery thing and look at it while trying to look at the screen. Cause you can only look at one or the other.
You got one choice. So I'm gonna have to put myself in there at some point. I'll have to make that happen. Sooner
just walk up like, hey, I'm John Morgan. You might know who I am. Can I just sit there for a minute?
You may have heard of me from such websites as MMA Junkie and MixedMartialArts.com. All right, listen. The Israel Adesanya video finally came out. Did you get a chance to take a look at Israel Adesanya?
I just peeped a little bit of it. You talking about the interview on his website?
Yeah. I
peeped a little bit of it, and then I was just like, I'll watch it later. I don't know.
I guess I only had a couple of comments. No, I mean, listen, we told you from the beginning, look, this is what's going to happen. Not that it was not obvious how things were going to play out. But I'll be honest with you, man. I think this is really smart for fighters, man, to just, especially at that highest level. Now, when you're making your way up and you're trying to get your name known, like, not really speaking to the media and just be like, I'll do things on my channel, that's going to be a little tough. Like, you need to speak to the media and try to get your name out there and, you know, just get people seeing you. But, man, when you're at that highest level, like Israel Adesanya is, I think this is a smart way to handle things, man. Like, you know, it's like, not only, again, does he get all the views and does he build his channel and build his platform, which will help him during his career and after his career, so that's smart. But obviously the message is controlled. You can see very clearly in there.
I'm going to say that's it. He's controlling the narrative. Outside the view, I mean, you're controlling the narrative. You're controlling what questions and answers come out. So, I mean, and it's smart. I mean, like, it's smart like that, but also in the same sense, I'm like, okay, I appreciate the PR piece you gave us, you know,
you actually answered
the questions, you know, but it's a PR piece, you know,
it is.
It's a public relation piece.
But I'm telling you, if I was on that side of it, I'd recommend my fighter do the same thing. And you, I mean, look,
because he could have not did anything, you know. So I mean, he actually gave his thoughts on it and break down the little bits that I saw, you know. But you know,
right? Like we never, for instance, we never got the Ronda Rousey discussion that we would have liked, right? Yeah. Like, we just literally never heard from her. And I think that backfired on her. I think that's why a lot of people, you know, kind of turned against her. But, you know,
I saw Travis Brown had another recent test in between the last time I looked on USADA. He's had six tests this year. Staying in there. What's up with that? But all right, I digress. But I saw that just the other day,
because
I always be going to USADA, and just for a random, I've keyed into Travis Brown, and I saw again he's been tested one time this quarter, and I was like, what is going on? I
love it. Pay attention to the comeback. Hoppa's gonna come back.
Hoppa's gonna be back.
But the other thing you could see in it too is like there's several moments of you can see clearly that they edited it, and it's funny because they didn't even try to cover it up. Like, I mean, you could easily cover up the edits with B-roll and pretend like it was never edited. But I mean, so like they definitely controlled the message. They definitely did that. But I will say this too: the message was good too, because now of course there's obviously a lot of Israel Adesanya haters and they're nitpicking and they're whatever. But I thought it was good, man. I thought he gave credit to Sean Strickland. He gave credit to Eric Nixick. Said, listen, man, you know, admitted, I felt off that night. but also gave credit to Sean Strickland and Eric Nixick for, you know, for the way Sean kept the pressure up, for the way Eric was, you know, breaking down the calls and had really figured out Izzy as a fighter, and just admitted he couldn't make the adjustments, which is what we all saw that night. But
that's the part I think I wanted to hear the most, was just him to be able to admit that Sean put out a great plan, they had great execution, and that he just wasn't able to counter. You know, like, I think some people were expecting, maybe it's the Izzy haters, were expecting him to just be like, you know, to come up with some excuse and never put any blame on himself. But he was open about that. And that's the part that I keyed in. I was like, oh, that's awesome. That's cool. That's what I wanted to see out of it. The rest of it, I'm like, you could fluff it up as much as you want. It could be as big as a PR piece as you want. Just admit that the night wasn't yours, that something happened, that you weren't able to come up with an answer for what was on the other side. And then I'm like, cool, because that's what we saw. That, and it was just good, and it was nice to hear that. And I was like, okay, cool. Now you can talk about yourself the rest of it. I just wanted to hear one honest, like, moment where it was just like, yep, the guy was the better guy that night. You know, I had no answer for him.
I think he gave it, man. I think he gave it.
Kudos to him.
I thought he did. So I thought he handled it really well. So I just want to say, I thought this was handled well, and I think more, again, the highest level athletes, again, the ones making their way up, no, get out there, do as many interviews as you can, get your face out there. But when you're at that high level, man, don't be afraid to handle things this way. I think it's honestly, I would recommend it for fighters.
Yeah,
being honest.
You get a million subscribers on your channel, man, fucking do it.
Yeah, and that's a platform that you can use, you know, after your fighting days are done too. Right? I mean, the 100%. Type of paychecks that Israel Adesanya is cashing when he fights, I don't think he's looking too much into the YouTube revenue to make sure, like, hey man, like,
and his brother might be
absolutely, his brother might be. And then once your fighting days are done and you're looking to just have a little bit of extra income coming in, you know, you still have that platform that you can continue to make money off of afterwards. So I think it's smart, man. I just wanted to throw that out there. The other thing I did want to point out too, before we start talking about this weekend's fights, did you see the piece from Angela Lee on the Players Tribune? Resilient.
I saw the summary of it. Yeah, I didn't really read it, but I saw the highlights of it, and I thought it was interesting. I mean, it sort of laid out what all of us, well, most of us, kind of knew or already heard through, you know, through the grapevine about her sister. But I didn't know that about her car accident herself. I thought that was very honest and open. But yeah, so I saw the highlights, summaries of it, bits of it. But yeah, I didn't go through the whole thing.
It's definitely worth checking out as well if you get a chance. And you know, I'm just recommending it to people out there. Just it's incredibly open and honest, like you said, talking about her sister, which is an absolute tragedy. But then talking about what she went through herself, as you said, you know, an attempted suicide of her own, and you know, just kind of owning up to the pressure that she felt, even as it seemed like, you know, the world was her oyster and all the 100%. Things were successful. And like, she's
100%.
She's winning fights and she's got belts and she's the poster child of this organization.
She was the poster child.
Right?
100%.
They were building around her. There's no question. They were building around the Lee family. One championship was, you know, they were going to build around her because it was, you know, it made sense, right? She had the Asian ties. She had the American ties. It was like the perfect family to kind of build over and so I mean, they were really using her as a cornerstone of the franchise, but she talked about, you know, kind of the pressure that came along with that, even though it felt like everything was amazing. I just think it's a good reminder, man, because listen, man, everybody feels that to a degree, you know what I mean? Like, no matter who you look at in life and you feel like, man, they got it nailed, dude. Everything is awesome, man. That, dude, everybody's got those doubts and everybody's got that anxiety and everybody's got those concerns and those whatever. And it's just, I don't know, to hear somebody voice it like that. And that's, she's actually started a nonprofit called Fight Stories that, you know, she credits her sister to having ownership as well, just to continue to tell stories like that, just to help people be aware, you know, that you're not alone out there if you're feeling these things, and there is help out there for you. And not only is there help out there for you, but there's just a lot of people that can relate, you know, even if it's not exactly to what you're going through, that they can at least relate to a degree. And it was a good read. It's a very, very open and honest read. And I think a good read too, to remind again the stress that a lot of fighters go through, man. The things that go through their mind, it is it's such a mental challenge, man. And you know, but again, it doesn't just relate to fighters. I think it relates to everybody out there. So I just wanted to recommend that piece as well to anybody that hasn't checked it out. Again, it was Resilient was the title of it. And it's at the Players Tribune. So
That's awesome. Yeah, really, I'll have to give it a That's good to watch, for sure.
For sure, man. All right, well, let's talk about this weekend. It is a double event weekend. We do have Bellator 299 early in the day on Saturday. I love it. If they're going to be on the same day, at least one of them can be in Europe so we can just have a day-long experience with watching MMA. We can catch it all. I think 21 fights on the card at Bellator. So, you know, maybe I'll duck in and out a little bit of a couple fights here and there with so many cards. They're loading up these fight cards right now for Bellator. I think, again, just maybe pointing to the inevitable of what we think is going to happen with Bellator and the PFL. You know, we've talked about it at length. You know, nobody's really speaking about it publicly, but as you speak to everybody behind the scenes, it's just kind of like, when the inevitable happens, it happens, and we'll figure it all out. So I feel like maybe they're just in a situation where they're trying to burn through contracts and just get people fights. You know what I mean? Just get them done because, hey, we owe you this, and we don't know what the future's going to do. Let's just load up, and get this done. So a good card over there, Bellator 299. But you and I, of course, we were covering the media day at UFC Fight Night 228. A fight card that I think does have some exciting moments on it. I think it is going to be – I think it does have some quality matchups that we'll talk about. But right up there at the top, Rafael Fiziev and Matoush Gamrot. I'm excited for this fight. I feel like maybe a little bit under the radar. I think it always is. When you come off controversy, you come off title fights, you come off all that, it's hard to look around. But, you know, this is number 6 and number 7 in the lightweight division. I think both of these guys have eyes on kind of proving that they belong in those top names right there. And, you know, I think it's an intriguing clash of styles. This has a little bit of everything for me, right? You know, it's two guys that are in that second tier that are trying to prove they're in that first tier, but then it's also a clash of styles because I love the fact that neither one of them is really trying to hide what they're trying to do. It's like, I mean, Fiziev's like, bro, my striking is better than anybody. I'm going to prove it. Although he did say he did learn to cook some humble pie, right, after his battle with Justin Gaethje. Meanwhile, Matoush Gamrot just says, my wrestling kills everybody out there, and so I don't think he's going to be able to handle me. By the way, had the tutelage of Joanna Jędrzejczyk in his corner as well. It was great to see Joanna champion walking around the apex. But I don't know. I'm pumped up by this matchup. I think it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, that should be. It should be really, really good. I mean, Matoush, I've rolled with that dude. Well, not rolled physically, but like picked him for staff picks for many, many times.
Definitely, I've not rolled with that guy.
Definitely not rolled with him. For many, many times, you know, and this one, I actually did go for Fiziev. I don't know why. Maybe I'll switch it again. I know when I see him across from each other in the weigh-ins, I'll probably see a size difference and I'll probably switch. But I don't know. I felt like after seeing like the Beneil Dariush and just some, even though I did get that win after that one, I think who was the win after that? Jalen Turner, which Turner is a tough, tough cat. I don't know, man. I just felt like I saw questions where I didn't see questions before with him on just being overall, whether he was able to, you know, be able to have success if he doesn't get fighters to the ground, if he doesn't get his hands on him, or is his striking going to be good enough to take the fight itself? And I'm just not quite sure. Whereas Fiziev, I think he's just got great power. He's got great hands. I think he's ready to go in there and make a big splash. But I don't know. Maybe I'll go back and forth on that one once I see him. But I am excited for that fight. I think it's a good fight. I think it's a worthwhile headlining fight. I know some people at first weren't really excited about it. And they thought, okay, that's a perfect apex card. I hate when people say that. Oh, it's a perfect apex card. Bro, that being said, I mean, this could be a co-main event somewhere else at a bigger event. Would I want it to see it at T-Mobile? I don't know. I think, you know, you get into T-Mobile, you really need to have almost at this point a title fight or something really, really moving to make it at that thing. But I think it's a good fight. And it definitely is a fight that has ramifications for the division. I mean, these guys are right, you know, going off the UFC rankings, they're right outside of the top five. Or at least maybe that's just Tapology's rankings. Well, that's who I happen to be looking at right now.
This is – so you bring up a really good point, right? Because I know a lot of people just hate the Apex and they just don't want the Apex should never host events or whatever. You and I are not among them. Now, we've admitted part of that is because it's incredibly convenient to us. But I think you also have to understand – how beneficial this is towards the UFC, because you're right about this, right? Like, if you're trying to go into a town, I don't know what town it is, and you got Fiziev and Gamrot, and you're trying to sell out, let's say, a moderate-sized arena, 12 to 13,000-seat arena, you know, not even like the big NBA, T-Mobile arena, you know, maybe something a little bit smaller, a 10 to 12,000. I think it's going to be a tough sell, right? Because these two 100%. Dudes are high-level martial artists. Like, right, we all, Fazeev's, man, his striking is unbelievable. It's so fun to watch. Gamrot, we know what he's accomplished on the international scene. Now, maybe if you were, like, I don't know, you know how, like, you know, Bellator, Strikeforce, whatever, would always bring, like, Fedor to Chicago because of the Russian population or the Polish.
That's it.
But these are not like superstars, right? So this
allows you got a Polish guy and a guy from Kyrgyzstan.
Yeah, I mean, where are you going to do that fight?
Boise?
Where
are you going to take that to Boise?
Boise? I just, you know, again, I think that's going to be a struggle, but it's a high level fight, and it's a fight that matters in the ranking. So to me, when people say it's a perfect Apex card, I know they mean it as an insult. But if you think about it from a UFC business perspective, it is. This is a great fight. But if you were a business owner, you're running the UFC, I'd love to hear from you where you would put this fight to know that I think I have the best chance. Like, they're both decent in interviews. They're not great. Yep. I mean, they speak English. Yeah,
they sound like we have to have it translated.
But they're not going to go on like the local news or a radio tour and just tear up the world and sell. You know what I mean? Yep. So it's just. I don't know. So I do think this is a perfect Apex main event, but I think people use that as an insult when they really shouldn't. But because
it's going to be a banger. It's going to, you know, both guys are going to bring. It's like neither one of these guys are going to go out there and fight to get the W. They're going to go out there to fucking knock each other out or actually submit the guy. They want to finish. They want to win, and that's their styles. I mean, like, they have great heart. They have great endurance. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. And why not have it in that environment? I can't remember if it was Gamrot that said it or maybe it was somebody else that talked about they liked the atmosphere because it felt like it was like an underground fight. They're like, the first time I went in there, maybe that was Battle that said that
actually. It was Jourdain, and I remember it stuck out to me.
It was Jourdain.
It was Charles Jourdain, and it stuck out to me because that is exactly the way I feel about it. Now, maybe
100%.
Maybe now that we've done, I guess, 80 events plus all the contender series, like, maybe I feel less that way now that we've got to be up towards 100 fight cards at the Apex now that we've attended.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Something ridiculous.
So it maybe feels less like, but the first time you're in there, it does really feel that way for sure. Like, it feels like, are we supposed to be doing this? Like, are they going to come shut us down here in a little bit? You know, he said it feels like Fight Club, and he likes it. And there are people that like it. Again, there are numerous athletes that said, I feel less nervous when I'm in there. I can hear my corner better.
Hear my coaches. You can hear their corner.
You can hear
their
corner.
Like, you're hearing the –
so
it's amazing.
There really is something to it. Listen, should every card be at the Apex? No, I think it's great that there's an event at Madison Square Garden. I think it's great that they just added that insane co-main event to Madison Square Garden. Hopefully it helps them sell because those tickets are not
cheap.
How
about that?
Oh, my
God. How about that?
What an announcement
that was. That's an incredible main co-main event. Like,
That's a 1-2 punch right there. For a 30th anniversary show, that's a 1-2 punch.
That's a big one.
But there are cards that, I mean, there is a place in the business plan and in the sport for the Apex. So going back to your point, so I have the stats in front of me because I think you're spot on about this. And it's intriguing, right, because I've heard a lot of people point to the fact that, I mean, this is striker versus grappler, right? But a lot of people have pointed to the fact that, hey, by the way, Fazeev's takedown rate, and it's amazing. Fazeev's takedown rate, his defense rate, is 90.2%, which is pretty damn incredible when you consider...
That's incredible.
He's a striker, but he's a very, you know, he knows what it's like to defend. It's actually only slightly below Gamrot's takedown defense, which is 90.9%, which is amazing. Then you know, again, keying in the striker stats, the strikes landed per minute for Fazeev over his UFC career, 5.06, where Gamrot's only 3.03. So Fazeev is landing on average 2 more shots, significant strikes per minute. So you can see the output there. But the one that is crazy, so we just pointed to the takedown defense, but let me put this as well. This is pretty incredible. Mateusz Gamrot, his takedown accuracy is only 31.7%. So you go, 1 out of 3, okay, that's not really that great. I mean, it's not bad, but it's not great. The UFC average is 45%. So he's actually below average in takedown accuracy, except when you look at his average takedowns per 15 minutes. Mateusz Gamrot, 4.54 takedowns averaged per 3-round fight. So on average, he's taking you down 1.5 times a round. The UFC average on that is 1.93.
So is that the difference of main event versus a non-main event? Or is that just in the
No, because they do the average per 15 minutes. So I mean that just goes to show you how many takedowns he has, and that's why I'm leaning Gamrot. I think because if Gamrot can't get this to the ground, he is going to have a hard time with Aziz striking. There's no doubt about that. But when I think of Gamrot, I do think of, and I think those stats spell it out perfectly. He's 1 for 3, but he's going to get you down almost 5 times per fight. So what does that mean? That means that he reshoots and he reshoots and he reshoots and he reshoots again and he reshoots again.
Yeah, he never stops. And he never stops. Yeah, it never stops. I mean, I think he would have to get really, really hurt. And I think, and plus the striking isn't all that bad either, because he seems more of a counter striker looking for those takedowns as opposed to a guy that's going to go out there trying to knock somebody out. Whereas Fiziev probably wants to be busy with his hands because he wants to do damage. I think Gamrot's a little bit more reserved, where he's looking for those openings to maybe, you know, counter and look for a way to kind of sting you and then get his hands on you and get you down and then just pound the shit out of you or submit you or something. It should be interesting. And I reserve the right to switch my vote.
we'll check out the weigh-ins. We'll check out the face-offs. Yeah. I will say, by the way,
there's a 2-inch difference, but man, 2-inch on paper, according to Tapology's numbers are 5'10 for Gamrot, 5'8 for Fizzy. But I'm telling you, a lot of times you see him person and face to face, that it looks a lot bigger than 2 inches sometimes. Like what it says on paper, and when you see him, sometimes you're like, all right, somebody got the numbers wrong on this sheet because this guy looks a lot bigger than another one. So it'd be interesting. But Gamrot, he's big for that division when he's fully hydrated.
Well,
he's good size.
And I'll tell you what, I think it was Alex Buchanan who pointed out that he had LASIK. I didn't realize he had LASIK, but I did realize he wasn't wearing the glasses. And I will say. Yeah. He does look a lot more intimidating without the glasses. Because when he would show up to Media Week with the glasses on, I don't know, for whatever reason, I'm like, is that the same dude I'm used to watching? Yeah.
Those are some. He's got a pretty decent prescription level,
right?
On
those
like things,
thick lenses on those boys,
thick,
man.
They're thick. And I think that's what does it, because when you look in his eyes and he turns off to the side to answer somebody's questions, his eyes sort of becomes all like crazy giant because it's that heavy prescription size on it. But good for him. I mean, this, you know, it's funny. This is going to be the first fight. It's going to be interesting to see how he reacts to that, and maybe we'll see a whole different version. Because, you know, I think that a lot of times when I think about like Roxanne, Modafferi, and a bunch of other fighters that have glasses that don't fight with them, you wonder how well their performance would be if they were able to see 100% in there. And he's going to go in there seeing things a lot clearer than he's ever had before, perhaps. And so it should be interesting. It could be interesting. Maybe he'll start throwing those hands because he can see the guy across from him a lot better.
So great.
he goes in there, he's just throwing 10 shots per minute or something.
I love the Roxanne Modafferi reference. Obviously, you know how much love I have for her.
She's awesome.
But it was crazy to see her step in there and just like, I mean, just squinting to see on the other side. You're like, you can't see.
I was
see
like, any- can she see anything?
I don't think she talked about it too much until she retired. But she was basically like, afterwards, she was like, yeah, unless I have contact with my opponent, I basically can't see them at all. Like, it's just like colors.
Wait for the blur to get close, then I grab it.
So crazy.
And I twist its damn leg off.
Oh, too funny. All right, co-main event, a fantastic one as well. Bryce Mitchell against Dan Ige. Yeah. Tough one here, man, because I got a lot of love for both these guys, man. Dan Ige, of course, you know, we've seen the rise. We saw the setbacks. Now we see the rise again, and he's talking about, you know, kind of all the pressures he put on himself, and you know, it all came around the time of fatherhood, and he was like, man, I got to provide for my family, and he started having those setbacks, and he started having those self-doubts, and now he's back, and we know that dude is just dangerous. Like, he's coming in to throw. Meanwhile, you got Bryce Mitchell, who, you know, I've been a Bryce Mitchell fan from the early days. You know, I always said it, the first time I saw him was, you know, World Series of Fighting, when he was like on the undercard there, I think V3 fights, which is now part of CFFC. But, you know, the old Joey Varner interview where he's like, why do they call you Thug Nasty? And he's like, y'all see me in the cage, but you ain't see me in the streets. And I was just like, I love this guy, you know. And obviously he had the game to go with it. His grappling game is incredible. But now he's coming off a loss, right? Not only is he coming off a loss, but he's coming off an injury as well. And maybe there's some doubts that he's not the guy that we thought he was. But then he came in the media day, and he's like talking about his maturity and where he stands now. And I think it should be fireworks. I think in a lot of ways, it probably stylistically kind of echoes the main event as well. Not that they're perfect carbon copies of each other, but I got to imagine Dan Ige wants to keep this on the feet, and Bryce Mitchell wants to turn this into a grappling contest where he's more dangerous. I think we see whoever imposes their will, that's the one that gets it done.
I think you're 100% right. And it's tough because, you know, that being said, with like the loss of Mitchell and the injury and just, you know, yeah, seeing him come in was just like, it was like a whole different version of him yesterday. He was much more reserved, much more humble in a sense. He was very, you know, talked a little bit about his faith, you know, and what it's done for him. And he was just very, very polite. He literally walked through the whole room, shook everybody's hands. You know, it's funny. He was cutting behind me and I was like, please don't trip over anything. I was like, 'cause if you fall and hurt yourself, I was like, they're going to fucking kill us. But he just wanted to thank everybody. He was just happy to be there. He was really, really enjoying it. He said he was very happy to see you. I thought that was very cool and very humble of him. He was very humble coming in there. It should be interesting. You know, it's tough. If there's a betting person that's looking at my picks and you want to follow it, I will put the disclaimer. I did lean. I favor Team Extreme Couture on this one. Yeah. I'm kind of homering out a little bit. But if I had to make my druthers, I would probably pick Mitchell, but in the sense I want to start training back at Extreme again. I don't want to have too many guys that are like, why the fuck don't you ever pick us? Like, you hate Extreme. I'm not trying to be like that. But I like Ige's story. He's a good cat, man. He's been paying his dues. Nice guy, but man, Extreme Couture is just riding a wave right now. So I'm on that one. I'm kind of homering out. But if, you know, I will put the disclaimer that there is part of me that wants to pick Mitchell for that fight, because I usually always lean Bryce Mitchell. But on this one, I'm just kind of homering out because I want to be able to train at Extreme Couture and not catch beef. So I got to pick far and few, even though I did pick Strickland to lose. But I think part of Extreme probably would have picked Strickland to lose. So I don't feel as bad. But part of me is like, I know Nixick's gonna look at these picks and he's like, fuck you, I don't want you coming to Extreme. So this is me saying I'm picking one for the home team. That's on this hilarious. Particular one, but I think this fight's gonna be great. I mean out of all the fights, I think the main event is great, but I'm more into this fight than the main event.
Wow.
Just because it personally, I think this one's more exciting. I like the characters a little bit better. I'm just more in tune to the characters. And I think that's what half the time when people are watching these fights, there's a story, there's a character, there's something that just draws them to this event. And it's these two cats, Bryce Mitchell. I mean, I think he's always just got, he's a galvanizing sort of thing. And he's not fool's gold, people. He's real gold.
He's real gold.
I like the cats, but yeah, in terms of maybe it doesn't mean as much for the division, but just in the fight that gets me more excited because I want to see, I think there's a bigger chance of there being a crazy submission to end it, or maybe a knockout in this particular fight than there will be in the main event. I see the main event having a better chance of going to a decision than the co-main event, but I'm excited for the co-main event.
I don't disagree with you. Top two are incredible. You have ranked women's strawweights as well between Marina Rodriguez and Michelle Waterson Gomez. Kind of an unexpected rematch there. Karate Hottie says, listen, could be an entirely different rematch than last time. Let's not forget, last time we put it together on short notice. Last time it was five rounds. Last time it was 125 pounds. Everything is different this time around. So she's predicting something a little bit different there.
Her mindset was awesome. Her mindset was just incredible yesterday. Yep. She was so honest and open. The Karate Hottie is definitely a hottie, but it was beautiful hearing her talk about she just had a great mindset when she came in there yesterday. I mean, it was just perfect, man. And looking forward to that fight 100%. That should be a really, really good one.
I am too. Brian Battle, AJ Fletcher, and Ricardo Ramos versus Charles Jourdain round out the main card. I think that Ramos-Jourdain fight should be a lot of fun. Both those guys. Yeah, both those guys kind of said it was going to be, you know, a war. Jordan, you know, you mentioned the one Jordan comment about fighting the Apex. The other one that cracked me up was, that one didn't crack me up. Like, that one resonated with me because I feel the same way.
But I think that's what you're going to talk about. Let's see if it's
you know what it is. It literally made me laugh out loud, like louder than I meant to, because he was talking about how the fact that he doesn't get as much attention in Canada as he would like, even though he's one of the Canadian veterans kind of leading the charge right now. And he's like, I feel like people look at me and like, well, you're not George St. Pierre. And he's like, no shit.
No shit. He's one of the greatest of all times. But thank you very much. I appreciate that comment.
It was so great. He was just like, yeah, no shit, I'm not George St. Pierre. Nobody's George St. Pierre. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that was awesome.
The way he just offhanded that.
He's a funny dude, man. He's like a, like, not that he's just like out there just throwing mad jokes, but he always comes off. He has a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
And he's very, very honest and open about shit. But yeah, man, and he's a hell of a fighter. So yeah, that fight should be a lot of fun. But yeah, he was hilarious yesterday.
He's great. Yeah. I think that should be great. Yeah. Because Ramos is one of those dudes, man, that is just dangerous, but he's just never been able to get consistent work in his career, man. He fights like once a year.
He's a nice kid too, man. He had a great personality coming in as well. Everybody seemed like in the media day, if people haven't seen the interviews, you can go to MMAJunkie.com and check out this one. But yeah, he had a great personality yesterday as well. I mean, you can't hate on any of the guys that showed up, and you can't hate on him. I'm like, whether you have a favorite, you know, you went the favorite Canadian, but yeah, Ramos. I'm always about the H's when it's Ricardo Ramos, even though that's not what his name is. But yeah, it should be really good. But I think you're right. Yeah, he has maybe a hard time, you know, kind of trailing some things together, but he's a badass, man. And the rankings, Tapology has him 33, has Jordan 20. And I think those numbers sound bigger than probably what these guys are able to do. I think that's their featherweight. Oh, that's worldwide or whatever. But yep. Yeah, I mean, it's a high level fight. It's a big, I am leaning Jordan in this particular one. I'm not sure where you were leaning on that, but I am leaning Jordan. But I've been kind of riding on Jordan for a little bit. I think he's always sort of been on the verge of making some big moves. And for a while there, he was making some big moves. But I think he'll return to those big towards the top of division, 100%.
Yep. I think it's going to be a great fight. The prelims, I'm telling you, I think it's going to be a decent night of fights in terms of just exciting. Dan Argueta versus Miles Johns, that could be a lot of fun. The one that's jumping out to me is Tim Means versus Andre Fialio, man.
That should be awesome.
Anytime the Dirty Bird's in there, you know that, like, that's going to be a fun fight. Andre Fialio gives zero fucks, you know what I mean? Like,
that's going to be a banger.
I can't wait for that one.
That's going to be fun.
Yep, Jacob Malkoon and Cody Brundage. Muhammad Usman is back against Jake Collier.
Yes.
Mizuki Inoue, who's just going by Mizuki now. A lot of people, this will probably be kind of a mystery name. But she's a prospect that had a lot of time away. I was very impressed with her earlier in her career. So she's looking to make kind of a comeback statement here against Hannah Goldie. We'll see how that plays out. And then Tamaris Vidal versus Montserrat Rendon starts the night out. So a tidy little 11 fights, I believe, you know, which is, I think, to me, about the right amount. Not too many. Not the 21 we got over at Bellator 299.
Well, see, I will not be starting my day. Since we have the fights in the evening, I will not be watching at the beginning of the night. I'll probably, when it gets towards the bottom of the card, depending on what time that would be, I'll probably pop that up if we're still at home. I'm trying to think of the first fight. What time is the first fight of the
So I'm trying to look at it as well. I know I believe the main
1
card.
1 p.m.?
1 p.m. is the main card.
Is that the main card?
Yeah.
Oh, so, yeah. So there's going to be some big, heavy crossover at the same time.
Prelims are at 8 a.m. Pacific time. So if you want to get up at 8 a.m. and start watching fights, no. So the main card will overlap with the prelims of the UFC. So you can't watch them side by side. But at least if you want to go main card to main card, you can. Which I think there's some decent prelims. That's right. I'm pretty fair with two screen viewing if I've got one main card and one prelim card, because I can kind of key in on the main card and kind of just monitor the prelims. What I hate is when it's like main card at the same time. Like, I just can't split my attention that way. So.
It's tough because one of them always wins out. But I will definitely, while I'm sitting in there watching the prelims, I'll probably pop up the main one and see what's going on over there, at least for a couple of the big major Bellator ones.
You have to. Busy weekend. And I will say, by the way, if ONE Championship does have a card, this is one of the Friday morning cards. So this is not the Friday evening card on Amazon. This is the ones that are early in the morning. Again, it's 8:30 a.m. Eastern is when it starts, 5:30 a.m. Pacific. But the main event, it's a big Muay Thai card, and there's a lot of really talented Muay Thai fighters on here. And again, Muay Thai and 4-ounce gloves, man, it doesn't get any better than that. But the main event is Rod Tang versus Super Lek. It doesn't get any better than that in terms of strikers. Now,
That's badness.
Super Lek missed weight, and so it lost a bit of it was supposed to be for a title. It's not. But this is kind of one of those ones that I don't think you care too much about the belt. I mean, this is literally just two of the best strikers on the planet.
Yeah, I just want to see the fight.
Yeah, exactly. So keep an eye out for that. That's early Friday morning. So, again, that's not the ones that are on the evening time on Amazon. They do have some of those coming up for the next 2 weeks, but this is a Friday morning one. So plenty of opportunity to watch lots of stuff. In fact, yeah, their next Friday night card is the following Friday night, September 30th. So looking forward to that. So anyway, listen, I apologize once again that we were a day late. I will accept 100% of the responsibility. It is not on Cold Coffee's shoulders whatsoever. I did want to go to that training seminar. And it was like we could have like rushed and squeezed it in between the media day and the seminar. But I was a little worried about that. And then I could have tried to do it afterwards. But then, you know, I had soccer practice with the kid. And we had the baseball tickets. And we wanted to go hang out in the pool. And so I just asked for forgiveness to delay it one day.
It's okay.
We'll be back to work next week. Not a lot going on. I guess I should say enjoy the busy weekend of MMA this weekend. Because we actually have kind of a rare week next week, right? There's no UFC. There's no Bellator. There is some one. But we'll get kind of a relaxed week here in Las Vegas.
We'll do it after 2 weeks back-to-back. The contenders, when I say back-to-back, I meant like contenders, then fight week. I'll be ready for it.
Yeah.
I'll be ready for it.
And you do even more than I do because I don't go to the weigh-in. So you do Monday morning contenders weigh-ins, Tuesday night contenders, Wednesday media day, Friday weigh-in, Saturday fight. Yeah. So you're at the Apex 4 days and the Palace Station 1 day, so you're on assignment.
And then last week we had the Noche, we had the Thursday as well. They threw in that event that was at the Level Up. I was like, oh no! So that was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I was like, that's a fun week. But yeah, so I'll be ready. I'll be ready for next week. Then.
So
I didn't even realize it was a non fight week. I just assume there's fights. My life is just like Saturday. I already know what's happening. It's a fight. It's a fight night, obviously. So
being a non-fight kind of fight week, I wonder if that's the time to just break out the frosty beverages and get a little wild with it.
Mm-hmm. I'm probably about due.
I mean, you know, I haven't since last night, so I guess I'm.
Oh, good Lord.
Just kidding. All right, listen, appreciate everybody's patience for putting up with us for being a little bit late. Apologize. I'll take responsibility for that. Appreciate everybody that supports us over at patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. You guys mean the world to us. And, of course, we will have a half episode this week as we do every single week. And if you're not able to join us over there, if you can at least just take a second to rate us, interview us, wherever you listen to us, that does help us out. I like to do it on Apple Podcasts, but wherever you do, it helps us out. So always appreciate the support. Always appreciate you guys being around for us. More than anything, we'll just say thanks for listening.